Welcome to the Vet Med Wellness and Leadership Podcast, where we discuss central challenges vet med leaders face, such as burnout, stress, and difficult interactions with clients and staff, just to name a few. In each episode, you will hear about actionable solutions that you can apply to your practice and invitations to connect with fellow leaders who are passionate about improving the wellness of the vet med profession. By subscribing, liking, commenting, or sharing this podcast, you are helping more veterinary professionals find the resources shared in these episodes. Thank you in advance for listening and supporting this show. I hope you enjoy it. Hey, everybody. Crystal Stokes here. And joining me today is Cindy Wondix, who's a licensed veterinary technician in multiple states and holds a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology. So Cindy has experienced everything from caring for animals, teaching others how to care for animals, and leading the expansion of the hospitals that save their lives. With all of her experience in education, one of her new adventures is sharing with others all the potential career avenues of veterinary medicine. And today, we are going to discuss transitioning from a technical position into management with a very special focus on advice for those new to management positions. So, Cindy, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Me too. Well, I'm going to start off with like just diving in, talking about your background, because one of the things we connected on was how interesting your background is, what you were studying in school, and how it's a little unconventional for someone that ends up in veterinary medicine. So tell us more about your background.
Yeah, so I ended up going to school on a partial track scholarship to a small university, and I decided to major in psychology. My dream was actually to eventually be a marriage counselor. That's what I went into school thinking that I would do, helping people solve their problems, which I still do, just in a different way. So that's what I always thought I wanted to do. So my junior year, I decided to get a side job, do something to bring in some income, and I started working at a local general practice. Started off working in kennels, did a little bit of technical nail trims, grooming, kind of how everybody starts off in the field. And I decided, like, I love this. I want to do this full time. I want to see how I can transition. But I was a junior in college and I didn't want to change my whole life and my major and everything when I just had one more year to go. So I said, hey, let me just finish out this degree in psychology. If I use it, I use it. But I'm going to pivot somehow into veterinary medicine. So after I graduated, I decided to go to tech school. And I went to a two-year program, got my license in Texas, and started working in Texas as a technician. And I loved it. I spent some years in GP. I spent some years working in ICU, where I really got the bulk of my experience. And then, you know, I did that for, I want to say, about 7 years. And I was like, okay, this is fun, but what else can I do within this space that's still going to let me, you know, keep my love of caring for and helping animals and their owners, but also start to pivot more into what I felt at the time was maybe an adult job or a grown-up job or just something different, something that would allow me to kind of expand my knowledge of veterinary medicine in a different way. So then I decided to pivot into teaching because while I had been a technician for so long, I had kind of pivoted within my hospitals to a leadership role, and I ultimately was teaching new technicians how to operate within the field. So I wanted to take that to another level. So I started teaching at a technical school. I taught pharmacology. I taught laboratory procedures. I taught office management, taught a lot of courses, and I really, really enjoyed my time kind of developing these new technicians going into the field. And it was a really awesome experience to be surrounded by people who were still so excited and this field was still so new to them. I really enjoyed. And then making my way to where I am today, I currently work as an expansion manager. So anytime the corporation I work for now opens a new veterinary hospital, I manage those new locations. And it's been a really, really awesome experience because I get to work with new groups of people every month. Literally every month we're opening, you know, 3 or 4 locations. So I get to work with these new teams and develop them. And it's really awesome to see, you know, the front end of it where it's like, you know, the building's not even complete yet to a few weeks later, you got 20 patients in a day and we're, you know, serving this community. It's really been an awesome, awesome experience. And so I just feel like I've run the gamut as far as careers and things that you can do in veterinary medicine. I just think it's really awesome, all of the things that you can do under the umbrella of vet med.
I love that topic because that's one of the things that was really fun in our first conversation is I think many people kind of along their way in veterinary medicine often hit a wall. They feel like, I'm stuck. I'm bored. Is this all there is? And that's where they might think about leaving the industry. And the conversation we're having today, I think, can open people's eyes to the idea that there are so many different ways you can be involved in veterinary medicine outside of being a clinician or a technician. Describing a little bit of what does your role look like a typical day or a typical week? I know it involves a lot of travel. So let's have somebody listening that's like, ooh, like expansion manager, would I enjoy something like that? So let's talk about what does a typical day or week look like for you?
Okay, so typically I travel. My travel days are Monday, Friday. So I'm traveling to whatever market this clinic is. Currently, I'm in Arizona. So I'll travel to the market on a Monday. I will work Monday to Friday to support the team. So I'm working still in a clinical setting or on the managerial support side. So the practice manager for these actual locations, I'll teach them about budget and revenue. I'll also help them do like their staff meetings and kind of their one-on-ones, learn their inventory, and just learn how to operate their clinic on a day-to-day basis and be a support system for them. And then on Fridays, I fly home, and then I get to spend my Saturdays and Sundays at home. And then Monday, we start all again, and we're, you know, back in the clinic. So it's really, really awesome.
It's fabulous. When you think about the role you're in currently, what would you say you absolutely love about it, and what are the parts that you find are most difficult?
I think what I really love about this role is getting to interact with a new group of people every month. So every month we're doing a new location. I get to meet all of these new exciting people with different backgrounds and different levels of experience. It's really cool to just learn new things. Like I'm from Texas and right now, like I said, I'm in Arizona and I'm learning about all the people here go like catfishing and noodling and things like that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like I didn't see that kind of stuff growing up where I'm from. So it's just so cool to see how different people, different cultures, different places operate, and having those conversations is amazing. One thing that's difficult, I won't say it's something that I hate or dislike, but one thing that's difficult is the same thing. It's these new teams, these new people every month. It's new personalities. It's learning how to engage with those personalities. It's learning how they best learn. It's learning how to best give feedback in a way that they receive. And while it's very rewarding when I'm able to develop a team that does well, that's cohesive, that, you know, can really operate in this clinic effectively and efficiently, it still can be hard, again, to learn new people and to best learn how to get them to the level of success that you see them at and that you want them to be at.
I can see your background in psychology being leveraged right there. You're like, I have to understand how humans operate. And what do they need? And how do we read them? And every person is a little bit different. So really putting that degree to good use.
Yeah, I try my best. I try my best. But, you know, I've had the blessing of having amazing teams all the time. And I have learned as a manager and developed as a manager to learn how to best support these teams. So that's been really, really good.
Great. So this is a perfect segue because we are here to really talk about moving into a management role. Especially focusing on people that might be new to a management position or fairly green. What I often encounter, you may have seen this too, is that sometimes a person's really good at their job technically, like they're a wonderful technician, and then they get promoted into a management position and then not given any training. It's like, you need a job, go manage other people that do the job you used to do, which is unfortunate. It is not the best model for somebody into a management role. But I'd love to just start with talking about piece of advice that you would give to those new managers, or we could also say like piece of advice that you would have given to your younger self, looking back in time, what would you want to tell her?
I have a few things. So my big thing would be you are where you are for a reason,
right?
So these new managers that get promoted, there's a reason that you got promoted. There's something that somebody sees in you that believes that you can be a great leader for your team. So you really have to acknowledge those things in yourself and be confident in yourself to be a good leader. A big thing that I see is these leaders who get promoted and then they're timid and they don't feel comfortable managing their team. And, you know, I have to tell them, like, that's why they wanted you. That's why they gave you this role. They believe in you to find good ways to manage your team, to get them the most success out of each of your team members. So you really have to be confident and step into this role. And there's not just one way that a leader looks. You have to learn what a good leader looks like for you and how and what a good leader looks like to your specific team. And you have to really step into that role and just be confident. Be confident and own it.
I can hear the imposter syndrome like dying slowly in the corner because it's so common, right? From people that are new to a role feeling that feeling of, I don't deserve to be here. I'm an imposter. Everybody, if they knew how unconfident I was and how scared I feel, they wouldn't want me to be in this position. And you're there to remind them, you're promoted for a reason. Like,
yeah,
look at yourself accurately and give yourself credit where credit's due.
Exactly. Confidence is key in all aspects of life. If you carry yourself with the confidence, like you deserve to be in the space that you are, everything else will fall in alignment.
Said like a former athlete.
Yes.
Okay, great. So that's piece of advice number one. So what's your second piece of advice?
My second piece of advice is talk less and listen more. I have a journal that I write, you know, my thoughts in every morning. And that's the first thing I write, talk less, listen more. Because you cannot make informed decisions without the information. So you really have to take time to listen to the people that you're managing and feel out what the needs are of your specific place and your specific place and your specific people. Not every group or clinic or location or hospital is going to need the same things. And if you just, you know, come into a space and start trying to express your ideas and what you want without listening to the needs of the people that it's going to affect, it's not going to go well for you. So I would always say just take the time to really listen to what the needs of the people that you are managing are, and then find solutions to those things.
I like it. So you're customizing your approach. Basically, when you go into a practice, you don't just have a cookie cutter way that you're going to make everybody do it the exact same way. You go in and you say, tell me what you all are dealing with. I want to know what it's like to run this clinic. And as you're listening, you're looking for places where they're struggling and how you might be able to help solve those problems.
Yes, exactly. There's so, you know, again, so many different personalities. And then again, like I said, right now I open clinics all over the United States. Right now I'm in Arizona, where they have different approaches to medicine or different cases that they see on a day-to-day basis that they may not see in a different state. So I'm like, how can I best help you serve the clientele that you know is going to be coming to you? Because I'm not from here. I don't know what this clientele needs. So I like to listen to the needs of my team and then kind of help support them from there.
I love it. It reminds me of that expression that you have two ears and one mouth. So your ratio of listening should be a 2-to-1 ratio.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Great. Okay. So that was advice point number two. How about number three?
I would say don't be afraid to have the hard conversations, because they're not always hard. I think that was a big thing when I got into a management role. I was so scared if somebody, you know, did something and they needed to, you know, have a conversation with them, or they needed some correction or just some guidance, I would be so scared and building it up to be this huge moment in my head. And when you don't address something, it just gets worse. Whether it's actually getting worse or getting worse in your mind, it's going to build up if you don't just address what's going on. For example, I used to manage this one team member, and she had this, she did this thing where anytime you would try and give her any sort of correction, she would kind of talk over you or jump over you and wouldn't let you get the thought out and wouldn't kind of listen to the constructive feedback. And I would, you know, I'd get so worked up about it in my head, and every conversation we had when she did it, I would let myself get so frustrated. And I said, you know, why don't I just pull her aside and talk to her? That's what I should have done when I first noticed that it was a concern. And I pulled her aside and I let her know. I was like, hey, you know what? You're a really great team member. I think you have so much potential. There's just this one thing that you do that can kind of rub people the wrong way. You have to make sure that you're listening to people and not talking over them, giving up that respect. They should give you the same respect. And she was like, oh, I did not realize I was doing that. I am so sorry. I will be more aware of it. And then after that, I sat and I just talked to her, and she didn't say anything. She just sat back and she listened to me, didn't interrupt me, didn't jump over me. Never had that issue with her again. She was always now like super open to any kind of conversation, letting people talk. And then I'd let, you know, she'd say her piece. But I'm like, I don't know why I didn't just have the conversation with her when I first noticed it months ago when I first wanted to say something. It wasn't, you know, that large of a deal that I made it in my head. And she was very receptive.
Yeah, I think this is one of the biggest things that I hear as a pain point in hospitals, period. Whether a person's in management or not, they say difficult interactions are the worst part of my job, whether it's a difficult interaction with a client or a team member. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, it's just so anxiety provoking. So do you have any thoughts on, I know this is a little bit taking us off the trail of our points, but I think under the umbrella of just when you have to have a difficult conversation, just go ahead and try to have it, get it done. Do you have any thoughts or like maybe a story or an example of having those difficult conversations with a client?
Yes, so many stories, but I'm trying to think of one that best suits. You know, I think, again, it's just not being afraid to have those conversations, and then also just trying to think about what that client is going through and see it from their perspective, especially in the field I'm in. Like, I don't work in GP. So most of the time when these clients are coming in, it's not just for vaccines and Nelstrom. It's something is wrong with their pet. And I know people view, you know, their pets as their babies, members of their family and things like that. And the stress that comes upon you when you have to take your pet in to be cared for, it can be very stressful. On top of that, it can be financially taxing. So I try and think about those things and where they're coming from. And I know that a lot of times when there seems like there's anger towards me or towards my staff, it's usually not that. It's usually within them. They're frustrated at their situation. You know, they're unhappy. They're sad. They're scared. So I just have that conversation with the perspective that, you know, they're hurting and I'm here to help their pet. I'm also here to help them. So what can we do to kind of help this situation, make you feel like you're in a safe space, make you feel better so that we can have a constructive conversation that at the end of the day is going to be a better outcome for your animal. And I think just taking that approach has worked wonders for me. Usually able to kind of resolve those issues pretty quickly if you just come with that approach. Never come, you know, angry or upset or, you know, trying to start a fight. It's just about being receptive and listening.
I like that. And you really have that, the pet's, you know, best interest in mind. Like, how can we really have the best outcome here for your pet and get on the same page?
Yeah, exactly.
Well said. Okay. Sorry to take you off track. We were still going down.
Okay.
Your tips for your younger self or early stage managers.
I would say another one is never assume. Never assume. I usually, with my current position, I'm meeting these teams very early on before these clinics even open. And sometimes I'd have, you know, for instance, I'll have staff members that miss the whole week of training or miss the virtual learning before the clinic opens. And it's so easy for my brain to say, oh, they're just lazy. They don't want to be here. And a lot of the times it's not that. I had a situation where somebody, you know, missed a few days of training and I contacted them. I didn't get a response. And so, you know, I was really, really concerned. And eventually they reached out to me and said, hey, I have my partner is in the hospital and I had to travel out of state to be with them. You know, I'm sorry that I was not able to communicate, but that person was my priority. I completely understand that. And I completely understand that. And so that put me in a place, that specific situation put me in a place to say, you know, never assume exactly what's going on in anybody's life. Because really, if you think about it, no one knows exactly what's going on in your life. Most, especially, you know, your coworkers, they only know what you share or what goes on in the 9 to 5 or the 3 to 11 or whatever hours that you work in that clinic. You don't know what's going on in their personal life. So I always just kind of make the effort to, if there's any sort of concerns, to really communicate and understand what's going on with, you know, my team. And I think that's worked out really, really well.
That's so big. You know, as a therapist, I think a lot about, you know, having empathy. It's so natural for us to assume. It's just a knee-jerk reaction. Or to assume like that people see the world the same way we see it, and to have the ability to step back from that and be curious, you know, and just go in with an open mind. It's a really important skill for a manager to have.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Are there any other tips that you'd want to give to your younger self?
I think one more, and I think it is to take time for yourself. You cannot pour, everybody says you can't pour from an empty cup. Especially being a manager, there's so much that you have to pour into your hospital, into your team. So you have to make sure that you're really taking that time for yourself. I meet these new managers and I'm like, hey, what days do you have scheduled? I can work on the days that you're off so that we can kind of manage this team together. And they'll be like, oh, I have myself scheduled 20 days in a row. I'm like, what's happening? Why do I need to work 20 days in a row? And they're like, it's a new hospital. I just want to be here for my team. I'm like, no. Because after day four, you're not really there for your team anymore. You're mentally going to be exhausted. You're not going to be, you know, the best manager that you can to your team. So make sure that you are taking time for yourself, refilling your cup so that you can be the best leader for your team.
Was that a challenging one for you to learn personally?
Oh, absolutely. When I first got into this role, I was like that. I was like 20 days in a row, every day I'm going to be here and make sure everything is being followed by the book. I was like, hey, I had to take time for myself. And I also had to just trust that my team, it has learned from what I've given them. They can manage things. So it was definitely a big lesson for me in the beginning. But
I bet that was hard. Do you have any things that you especially find fill your cup in your off time?
Yes, definitely. So in my off time, I am a very, like a person just likes to relax. I just sit in my bed and I binge watch Netflix series. And then I also like to journal. Journaling is really awesome for me. It makes me feel great. I kind of write all my emotions out, my feelings, and just anything about my day. Just writing it out helps me see things more clearly, helps me feel more relaxed, helps me feel calm. So I'll do those sorts of things. But to me, my job is so, you know, so much on the move, so much traveling, that refilling for me is just laying in the bed all day. That is what refills me. That is what makes me feel like, okay, I'm decompressed. I'm ready now to like start the new week strong and support my team.
It's so balancing. I was just thinking we should totally hang out because it's I'm like, I feel the same way. I love to just Netflix and chill with a cat on my lap. And I also love journaling. I think my clients get so tired of hearing me say it. I'm like, you know, journaling is a very good modality for processing stress and understanding your feelings. It's like, womp, womp. But it, I think for certain people, it just really lands and it's a great outlet. And you see how like in different parts of people's career, when you're in a part of your career like you are with really high volume, it's a lot of interactions, a lot of movement. You're up in clinics, you're flying back and forth, a lot of activity. Then you need something that's balancing that, which is really like slowing down, having space, having quiet. You know, you need that like yin yang balance to come in. It sounds like you're doing absolutely a nice job of finding that on the weekends.
Yes, absolutely. Yep, I definitely enjoy my quiet time. I need that good balance of the controlled chaos and then the Netflix relaxing binging. As long as I have those two balanced out, I can be happy.
That is so good. When I think about managers that are entering into a role, when I think of all the different tips that you've just laid out for them, I think that it speaks to giving them permission to have agency and to ask for what they need. Like, you know, I'm even thinking like take a journal and write down what are the things in this management role that I don't yet feel competent in that I would maybe like to ask for more training in or some mentorship in. Like, gosh, I've never really had practice at having difficult conversations. And I think that's the tip that Sydney just listed, you know, starting off with that is great. But if you're still feeling like, oh, I'm just too afraid to jump in the deep end with that, you know, what kind of training could you get? What kind of support? So just to really take that time for yourself while you're refilling your cup and ask yourself, what do you need in order to develop? And you know, sit in the journey. Do you remember, like, were you given certain kinds of training or certain resources that really helped you develop? Or was it mostly you just dove in hands-on and you learned as you went?
So I will say when I first started off in the field as a technician, I feel like it was just, you know, I just learned by doing. And that was really, really great for me. I am a very hands-on person, so I do easily learn by doing. I remember my first day working in ICU, I placed a central line. And they just threw it on me. They're like, I'll walk you through it. You can do it. And I was like, oh my gosh. But then after that, I was like the go-to person to place the central lines. And I love that. I love learning by doing. In this role, just because I am opening multiple hospitals and managing all these teams, there's just kind of a little bit more structure that needed to be had. So my current company has a learning and development team. And I spent a month in learning and development before I got into my role. And I got to work with someone who was currently in the role that I was in. And she, that person, her name was Amanda. She was really, really amazing. Really taught me a lot of what I know today. And we worked in different clinics, worked with different teams. She taught me all the ins and outs before I was ever, you know, alone opening a clinic with a new team. And I really, really valued that person who supported me through opening these new clinics. Amanda, like I said, she was really awesome. And if you can find that one mentor who, you know, really knows the role and can offer you some support and some advice, it's really invaluable. It's amazing to have someone like that.
So lucky. I'm glad you had that.
Yeah, it's awesome. She was amazing.
Shout out Amanda.
Yeah, shout out Amanda.
That's great. So as we're coming down the home stretch here, for those listening who just want that one gold nugget takeaway, they're going to remember nothing else from this podcast today. What's the one thing that you would want them to remember?
Okay, it would be don't limit yourself to what you can do in the field. Don't limit yourself. There are so many things that you can do, so many different avenues that you can do within this field. And don't be afraid to just look and see what's out there and take that chance.
I love that. So if anybody wants to reach out to you for inspiration, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
The perfect way would be to connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn as Sydney Wandick. And you can direct message me, you can follow me. I'm happy to interact and give any advice and mentoring that anyone needs.
Excellent. I will put that in the show notes for you. And Sydney, it's just been such a blast to have you on today. I really appreciate your time.
It was great talking to you too.
Thank you for joining me today. I hope that you feel stoked after listening to this episode. And as always, I would love to hear your comments and feedback. Is there a topic that you want to know more about? Please let me know. And thank you again for subscribing and sharing your favorite episodes with others. It really means a lot.